Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com. Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution: more knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money, episode 697, Mitch Cohen, author of Self-Made.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Welcome back to So Money, everyone. I'm your host, Farnoosh Torabi. Thanks for joining me here again. Question for you. What would it be like to have a balance with nine zeros? How would you feel? $1 billion? What does it take to reach that kind of money? Our guest today is Mitch Cohen, and he is the co-author of a book that answers that very question. And the book is called The Self-Made Billionaire Effect. Now, just to put things into perspective, there are more billionaires today walking the planet than ever before. Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, Sarah Blakely, just to name a few within our borders. And according to Forbes, 2017 was a record year with the number of billionaires climbing 13% worldwide to 2043. 56 of those billionaires, by the way, are under the age of 40. But there are only about 800 or so self-made billionaires, according to our guest. Mitch shares some of those characteristics of those wealthy individuals, and they include an empathetic imagination and what he calls patient urgency, which to me sounds a little conflicting.
had to ask him about that. Mitch spent over 30 years in the financial industry. He is a retired vice chairman at PricewaterhouseCoopers. There, he served as partner for over 20 years, and it was also there where he got the opportunity to meet and analyze the work and mindsets of some of the world's richest people. I also want to highlight that Mitch is a fellow Penn State alumni, and he and I both serve on the board of visitors at the Smeal College of Business there. So we are friends. And a fun fact, Mitch was a Human of New York profile. You know, those incredibly candid portraits of New Yorkers doing random things as New Yorkers do, and they've got some of the most captivating and moving captions. Well, Mitch was a profile, and he will share that experience with us as well. Here is Mitch Cohen. Mitch Cohen, my friend, welcome to So Money. It's great to have you on.
It's great to be with you today.
I wanted to have you on for a number of reasons. I was explaining in our introduction that we are both on the board of the Board of Visitors. Board of Visitors? Yes, Board of Visitors.
The Board of Visitors.
Yeah, I wanted to say Board of Advisors, but Board of Visitors at Smeal College, where I'm a new member, I'm a newbie, and you've been so gracious and kind and helping me adjust to that. And in learning about you, I also discovered that you are an author, and I thought your book would be a really great fit for our audience because the So Money Nation, as I call them, we're really interested in how to get to the next best level with our finances. We're super aspirational. And what's more aspirational than becoming a billionaire? I don't have that aspiration, I'll just be honest. But it's nice to live, it's nice to pretend and live through the lens of a billionaire sometimes. And so you wrote the book called The Self-Made Billionaire Effect, co-authored that. And what's different, I think, about your book and then a lot of other books out there about billionaires and rich people is that you focused mainly on the self-made billionaire. Can you define that a little bit more for us just so we understand who we're talking about?
Sure. And again, thank you for having me on. I'm really excited about this. A few years ago, my co-author, John Sviokla, came to me to talk to me about value. And from the context that we have so many clients that from PricewaterhouseCoopers, where I was a partner, that talked about creating value. And you hear CEOs all the time talking about value. Why don't we study people who've created the most value? And I asked him, I said, who would that be? And he said, it would really be the self-made billionaires. There are a number of, you know, hundreds of billionaires out there who I say earn their money the old fashioned way. They inherited it. But the people who've created real value are those people who had an idea and took it all the way to market and created over $1 billion of value through that process. So we really wanted to focus on that population.
And I understand, too, that, you know, talking about people like Mark Cuban, Sarah Blakely, John Paul DeJoria, all of these folks at one point or another worked for somebody else and left. So that's an interesting moment in their lives, too. At what point do they realize I have something bigger to contribute and where I'm at, my employer is not going to be where I want to contribute? Was there any kind of discovery about that moment in their lives and what kind of things that they went through and what went through their mind and why couldn't their employers keep them?
Well, I think that last piece that you just asked about is a really critical one because when you write a book like this, you never know where it's going to go. And what we discovered was just that point that many of these people had worked with other companies and couldn't achieve their objectives and get the satisfaction they wanted by being in those companies. Yet, those large companies that many of us in our firm deal with all the time are always in search of those people. So why is there that disconnect, if you will? And it turns out that many of these people, while they've obviously been successful when they went out on their own and led businesses, in a particular niche or specialty within a company, were not actually the stars. And, you know, many companies evaluate their people and, in a narrow kind of fashion with respect to their functional area. And in many cases, these people not only left those companies, in many cases, they were actually fired and were really unsuccessful. And But at the same time, what I think we tried to convey to companies was that these people really think in a very, very different way and have had different life experiences that are much more holistic and not as narrow, that make them the right kind of people to really think out of the box and create ideas that can create great value.
You touched on something really key, which is life experiences. And there are, I've discovered that, you know, a lot of times people who achieve massive wealth and success oftentimes come from nothing. And that's sometimes one thing that they will credit to their success. They'll say, because I had nothing to lose. Therefore, I was more risk tolerant. I went out there, I hustled. But one of the sort of characteristics that you identify in the book, the broad areas of these self-made billionaires, is that they're imaginative and empathetic. The empathy factor is key, right? And I think that if you do have a life that is holistic and full and has a worldview, and maybe you come from very few resources, that inherently makes you far more empathetic, I think, than others. And how does that then help you as you are building a business?
Well, I think, you know, there's been a lot written about empathy. It's a very common topic that's discussed a lot today. But empathy ultimately enables you to really put yourself in the shoes of a customer and think of things in a different way. That, boy, a customer, it's Sarah Blakely saying, you know, with Spanx, that, gee, I think women would really want this. This is Steve Jobs thinking of things in a different way, that, gee, I think this would be really interesting and I think the market would want this. But to really think in those terms of how a ultimate customer is thinking. But the other piece of it is that, and there's plenty of people who sometimes say, well, I had that idea, but did you really have the imagination and the wherewithal to go out and then do something about it? And not just say, well, gee, it would be great if we had this, and that's what these people do. They take that next step. But when we talk about life experiences, and I want to make sure I convey this to your audience, you know, the one thing that I learned from a lot of these people is that they traveled, they took courses and things that were maybe a little bit off the beaten path. They had different kinds of jobs, but they all, I say, formed a mosaic of their life that enabled them to draw on these different things as they thought about things. And, you know, I've done a lot of speaking at various colleges and universities, and, you know, the generation that's in school today, really, many people want to get their degree, get that job. And at times, I really encourage people to explore during your years at a university and maybe take some courses that may be not germane to your particular major or a very narrow area, but just things you're genuinely interested in. And it may have an impact down the road. Famously, Steve Jobs was asked many times about different colleges and universities he attended, and I think he attended several. And he said the most important course he ever took related to calligraphy, because it taught him about shapes and design that ultimately became one of the fixtures of what Apple ultimately was all about. So I really encourage people to, it's not a waste of time if you're taking something that you're really interested in.
How often did these billionaires in the beginning of their entrepreneurial path said to themselves, I want to build a $1 billion brand? How much was the money a part of the goal?
Zero. And I think that's one of, when we were first kicking things off about wanting to create $1 billion of value, they were all to a person focused on, no, I see a problem, I see a need, and I have an idea how to solve that problem or fill that need. And without regard to a particular dollar amount. Yes, everybody wants to create a certain amount of money, but I can tell you, even as an angel investor, and I do a lot of that today, when people show up and say, well, Joe, I want to make a lot of money. Yeah, everybody wants to make a lot of money, but let's focus on what the idea is and whether there's a market and what's your plan and how are you going to build a team and do all those kinds of things. The money, I think, is almost secondary and a byproduct of achieving the success of solving a particular problem. They don't necessarily measure themselves by money. Something may fail and they may say, gee, I really learned a lot from that failure, which will enable me to do the next thing. So they're not always keeping score the way many people keep score with just pure dollars and cents.
Right. It goes back to the other tenet from your book, which is that they have a what you call a relative view of risk. And
right.
The other thing I wanted to ask about was the another tenet is the patient urgency. Can you share more about that? Because that to me sounds like two words that would never be in the same sentence, patience and urgency. Well, what do you mean by that?
So, you know, there's a bit of a myth out there. There's several myths we uncover, but one of them was that these ideas come up and they get to market and you read about a Facebook or companies like that, and all of a sudden they pop up and they're worth billions of dollars. And people say, wow, that happened overnight, happened in a year. Well, when we looked at the data, you know, we're numbers people, so we look at data. On average, it takes 10 years to achieve that kind of success and value. The consumer may just see it on the back end. That requires a tremendous amount of fortitude and patience to wait that out. And we had many entrepreneurs tell us that, I knew my idea was the right idea, but I can't control when the market will actually understand that it's something, and I can't necessarily control that. However, the flip side of that is during those 10 years, you're not just developing a product, sitting back and saying, boy, I hope this takes off. You have this urgency to continually enhance it, improve it, promote it, to do all those kinds of things with a certain level of speed. But at the same time, balance that out with recognizing, you know, it may not happen overnight. And what we found was there were instances where people had ideas that came to market. And one of the reasons they were successful and somebody else wasn't was that people sometimes sort of give up. And that is one of the things about these folks that's very different. They hang in there. They persevere. You will have setbacks along the way. And one of the people we interviewed was Steve Case, who started AOL. And he said he felt his job as an entrepreneur was to smooth things out. You have these great highs where you're making an impact and you really think it's something's taking off. And you need to tell the team, okay, we need to sort of level it off and be able to manage this as we go forward. But then you're also going to have setbacks where maybe a product turned out you had a bug in it and it was a bit of a dud, or you got some bad PR, or you made a bad hire, and you need to bounce back from that and to keep things in the middle on an even keel over a long period of time while sticking to your overall mission as to what you're trying to accomplish. And not everybody can do that. And some of that is just, I think, intrinsic and the way people are. And sometimes life gets in the way and you say, gee, I've been at it for 4 or 5 years. Maybe I'm married, I'm having kids, I have a mortgage, I need to do some things. Maybe I need to go out and get quote unquote, real job. And unfortunately, sometimes that's what happens and people give up along the way.
Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution. More knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or problem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code PODCAST15. The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So, finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on Quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to Quince.com/sewmoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/sewmoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/sewmoney. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, even the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
There are more billionaires now walking the planet than ever before. Does that mean that it's easier than ever to become a billionaire, or is it still as hard as it ever was?
I think it's, well, part of that is just as time goes on and value goes up. And, you know, I actually had somebody say, you know, a billion isn't what it used to be. And, but I don't think it's any easier or harder. I think what may create opportunity is that the world changes at a much more rapid rate than it did before. So, and change is very often a catalyst for creating opportunity to create value. And I think that's one of the reasons why people say, and you could just look at, you know, over the digital economy and what's going on, or what you see with things like Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and things like that that just didn't exist years ago. And when you look at the list of billionaires today, you know, many of them, not all of them, but many of them are in businesses that didn't even exist or could have existed 10 years ago. So the real challenge for those people will be, how do they maintain their relevancy, and how do they make sure that they don't become obsolete and get overtaken by something else? I mean, there was a time AOL was, you know, on the cutting edge of things, and now it's not, obviously. And I know people find this hard to believe, but there may be a time when Facebook isn't the thing anymore. And it's
sacrilege. So the world changes. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Blast.
The world changes so quickly. And I think that's one of the opportunities for entrepreneurs, but also a risk.
Yeah. Certainly an opportunity. If you're anti-Facebook, then go make your own The bottom line is people still want to connect, right? That I think has been true since the dawn of time. So it's just about reinventing the way that we do connect. Well, so much about billionaires. I mean, did you finish this book thinking, man, I didn't work hard enough to become a billionaire myself. I wish I could turn back the clock and, you know, get myself on that billionaire track. Or I don't know, what for you, Mitch, what was sort of like the aha from this book about yourself?
It's a great question, because you do reflect on yourself a lot. And a lot of people who read the book reflect on, look, we looked at what I would call are the outliers, the people at the extreme end of the spectrum. But I think when you read the book, you realize, boy, there's certain things I can do that may be able to sort of move me up that curve a little bit in the way I look at the world and the way I conduct business, and may improve my performance and may advance me in certain ways. I'll give you one particular example that really resonated with me. And you mentioned risk earlier. And one of the things that we talk about with risk, everybody assumes these are the greatest risk takers in the world. And what we concluded was, yes, they take a lot of risk, but they balance the risk of what could go wrong, which is how most people view risk, balance that against the risk on missing out on what could go right. And I think when people think about opportunities, whether it's a promotion or a new position in their company, whether it's taking on a new, you know, moving to a different company, whether it's their own idea that they're trying to develop, there's always going to be a long list of reasons why things could go wrong. And I would never tell people to ignore those things. But you need to really think about, well, what could go right? Why could this be successful? And there was a CEO of a large company, a Fortune 100 company, who, when I explained it to her, she thought that was powerful. And what I told her to do, and she acted on this, but I said, watch your meetings when a new idea gets rolled out. See the balance between negative and positive. And she realized, as I did, that very often when a new idea is put on the table, people very often find some reason why it won't work, and it gets a snowball effect. So she took it upon herself to institute a rule that when a new idea was put out with her team, she wanted the next thing said to be positive. And that gets the ball rolling in a different way. So I'd ask people before they, when they have an idea about doing something or something's presented to them, to think about the positives about it and what could go right before you think about all the reasons why you're not going to take that risk.
So much is mindset. My goodness. I mean, it really is. It's like, just get your work on your head first, and then, you know, the numbers will hopefully follow.
Right.
Mitch, you are a human of New York. we are digressing a little bit, but I had to ask you this because I think it's so cool that you got selected to be a human of New York. And tell us about how that happened, a little bit of the behind the scenes.
Listen, I wish I could say it was because I wrote a book or did something famous, but I was literally just sitting on a park bench in New York reading the newspaper. When the gentleman who does the Humans of New York happened to walk by and just asked if he could interview me. And he did. He asked me a few questions. And lo and behold, I wound up in the book, which I think probably got more publicity than almost anything I've ever done. But an interesting thing about him, he actually, and that's become quite a brand in and of itself, he was somebody who actually I asked him how he started doing this. And he actually worked on Wall Street, worked in the finance area during the financial crisis. He lost his job, and you know, he was a really great photographer and started going out and doing these kind of interviews on the street. And lo and behold, it becomes a really successful enterprise.
Yes.
And so, you know, in his own right, he's a really very, very successful entrepreneur. And I know he had a finance background, but he clearly had the gift of photography and the gift and the guts to go out on the street and just ask random people questions about their lives.
Yes. And we're talking about Brandon Stanton. He's the founder of Humans of New York. It started as a photo blog where he would collect portraits of New Yorkers on the street. And just to add to what you were saying, Mitch, he's got over 18 million followers on Facebook, 7.5 million followers on Instagram. And that book that you were in was on the New York Times bestseller list for 31 weeks. That's something.
Yes, it's amazing.
That is amazing.
It's really amazing. And it's, I mean, I love stories, like that. And he was, he was really creative to go out and do that. And I think there's a lot of people who have that creativity in them, but don't necessarily make that leap to try something new. And they may be surprised at where that leads them.
Start small. That's what he did. He just started snapping away his photos and posting them on one platform. And I think it goes back to that characteristic from your book, which, I mean, he's not a billionaire, but he definitely knows how to execute. And that is something that all billionaires have in them. Mitch, we should mention too that we're both from Penn State. And I think that it's worth maybe chatting a little bit about the value of your college degree, wherever you go. And for me, going to Penn State was not necessarily my first choice, although now I'm so thrilled that I went there. In hindsight, it was the best decision I ever made when it came to my schooling. But I think that there are still some skeptics out there about where you go to school, that you should go to a brand name. What's your thought on college in general? There are some people who think don't even go to college. It's not really necessary. What's your kind of a nutshell perspective?
Well, if I bring it back to the book, I'll just say that there's not necessarily a correlation between the type of degree, type of school, how far you went in school in getting in creating $1 billion of value. There's PhDs, there's people with high school degrees, it runs the gamut. I think, and I would probably put myself in this category, even going back many years, I graduated from Penn State in 1981. I went primarily to get an accounting degree, get a job, and I enjoyed my years at Penn State, but what I've really learned over the years is I probably didn't get as much out of it because I was really focused, like many people today, on, gee, I want to pay off my student debt. I want to get through school. I want to get that job. I want to buy a car. I want to buy a house. I want to do those kinds of things. And I really think that as hard as it may be, those college years are really the years, you really grow. You have time to reflect. And I think it's a matter of what you get out of that college experience. And not just trying to get the best resume. Do you really have a broad circle of friends? Do you have a diverse group of friends? Do you experience different kinds of things that are available within various colleges and universities? And whether it's the top Ivy League school in the country or a community college, I find that there's always all sorts of interesting things and interesting people, but you have to put yourself out there to do that. And I think, you talked about Facebook earlier and connecting and building networks. Well, there's an old-fashioned way of building networks too in schools and colleges, and you need to spend your time in doing that kind of thing. So I would never say that a college education is not valuable, but I think it's very, very valuable. But I think it's valuable on a much broader basis if you really put yourself out there and experience what many schools have to offer.
I echo that. And I will say that for me, Penn State was an environment where I felt like I could be an explorer. It was a big campus, which you could look at it negatively and say, oh, I'm just going to get lost in the shuffle. But at the same time, like to your point, the next positive statement following that is it's so big. We're so rich in resources and people. It's really it would behoove me to not, you know, tap all of that. And it really set me up for life, because life is full of people. It's a big world. And anyway, it's really nice to connect with you, and looking forward to our time next in Happy Valley.
Yes, it's always happy in Happy Valley.
Usually. Usually.
So, Varnoosh, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to share some thoughts on this.
And thank you, Mitch.
I've become a real fan of yours and what you're doing, and I'm really honored to be part of it.
Thanks, Mitch, and thanks for all the work that you do. See you soon. Thank you so much to my guest, Mitch Cohen. The book is called The Self-Made Billionaire Effect. If you missed any of this, just head over to SoMoneyPodcast.com. You can download the audio as well as read the transcript. And while you're there, leave me a question for the Friday episodes of Ask Farnoosh. It's the end of February, February 28th. I hope you had a great month, and I'll see you back here in March. Have a great So Money Day. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code PODCAST15.